The Radio Arts Foundation, 107.3 and 96.3, KNOU, HD2, St. Louis.
Music. You know I must have a guest or two here. Actually, I have four. Count them, four! We're going to be talking about the World Chess Hall of Fame and also the St. Louis Chess Club. And it's just going to be a great interview here. We've got Tony Rich, who's the executive director of the St. Louis Chess Club. Good morning, Tony.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Oh my gosh, you are more than welcome. It's great to have you here. And with him, he also has Kylie Herndon, who's the marketing communications associate of the St. Louis Chess Club. Good morning, Kylie.
Good morning. Great to be here.
Well, it's great to have you here, too. I just gave you a little bit more gain there on your mic so I could hear you better. And then we have Shannon Bailey, who is the chief curator at the World Chess Hall of Fame. Good morning, Shannon.
Good morning, and again, thank you for having all of us.
Oh, gosh, this is great. We ought to order a pizza or something. And then the fellow who helped me set all this up is Brian Flowers. He's the marketing communications coordinator with the World Chess Hall of Fame. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Kathy. It's so nice to meet you.
So nice to meet you, too. We've been communicating by email, and today we finally got eyeball to eyeball, and it's great. We have a gem here with the World Chess Hall of Fame, and on one point of your website, it says, world-class exhibitions that explore the connection of chess to art, culture, and history. And that's really what the World Chess Hall of Fame is all about, isn't it?
It is. We're so happy to have it here in St. Louis. We opened up in 2011, and it actually has been in existence since the mid-1980s. It started in New Windsor, New York, moved down to Washington, D.C., and then really got big when it was in Miami, Florida for a few years. Mm-hmm. And it was started by a group of chess enthusiasts and players and people that were involved kind of in the governing chess body of the United States. And they basically thought, well, every sport and a lot of different cultures have halls of fame.
Right.
And there was not a chess hall of fame. And so they started one in 86, opened up the building in 88, and that's basically where it started. So with every time it moved, it kind of changed a little bit and added more to the permanent collection. And when it was in Miami, they opened up in 2001. They actually built a facility for it where you walked through a gigantic rook to get into the museum.
Cool.
And it was part of Excalibur Electronics, and Sidney Simoli was that he was the CEO of that company, and he was known for creating chess computers and other electronic devices. So
Whoa.
He was a huge fan and saw, a real need to grow this in the U.S. And unfortunately, in 2008, with the economy issues, the business struggled. And they had to not only close the business, but the museum.
That's a shame.
And it is really sad. But and Tony and Kylie can talk about this more, but in 2008 is when the St. Louis Chess Club opened. Yay!
So that's not a shame.
Right. And they just actually celebrated their 10th anniversary, to the date, on July 17th.
Well, happy anniversary.
Yeah.
That's great.
And so immediately, all eyes were on chess in St. Louis. The U.S. Championship started taking place here. They started peppering in some, smaller international tournaments and bringing in big-time chess players. And so everyone was looking at St. Louis and chess. So people that had been involved with the Hall of Fame said it probably should be in St. Louis, and it wasn't anywhere. And so, through generous funding from Dr. Jeannie and Rex Singfield, they gave the seed money to move the permanent collection to St. Louis.
Wow.
We started a 501c3. I was the first full-time employee.
Were you really?
8 years ago.
Golly.
And so I was brought on to kind of look through the collection, and I have a museum background. So I helped kind of set up, the mission statement and what kind of staff that we needed and basically how to run the museum.
That's a dream come true for somebody in your profession.
It is. I'm so lucky. So we opened up in September 2011, and we've been growing ever since.
And just wonderfully well, too. Now, I have a question, because you all are integrally related between the chess club and the Chess Hall of Fame. So where does one start and the other begin? You know, where does one leave off and the other begin?
Well, it's kind of hard to tell the difference because they're directly across the street from each other, and they're separated by the world's largest chess piece. We've got a giant chess king right in the central West End. But, you know, I like to say that the chess club teaches you how to play chess, or how to play chess well, and the Hall of Fame teaches you why to play chess. You know, what's interesting about it? What is it about this game that has hooked so many millions of people throughout the years?
Yes. Now, when you were establishing both, essentially, but the chess club was already an entity before the Chess Hall of Fame came along, I'm certain you must have been integrally involved together in the formation of this.
Absolutely. You know, Shannon and I have worked very closely together over the past 8 years or so now. You know, and it's funny when we look back at it. The chess club was originally just going to be a chess club, a community center, a place to hang out, a fun place for adults and kids alike to come play chess against each other. And it grew beyond anything I think any of us could have expected. But we started with the national championships our first year. We added the national junior championships the next year. We added international matches the next year with former world champions. And it just continues to grow. So the Hall of Fame, to me, really marks an important milestone in chess in St. Louis, because it's not just chess for the sake of chess players any longer. Now it's chess for the sake of the game itself and the real value that it brings to a community. Just like people see the art museum or the science center or the history museum here in St. Louis as important institutions of knowledge, the World Chess Hall of Fame is the same.
And what a remarkable gift this is to the community. And of course, Brian and Kylie, you two are both involved in sort of getting that word out about both organizations. What's the impact that you perceive in your marketing positions?
I think that chess, we really see a big impact in the community because of our scholastic programming. So we have those programs in over 100 schools throughout the community. And so we really see chess having a big impact on students, which that's the future. So
Sure. It's
great seeing the impact there. But then we also see it internationally with the international grandmasters we bring in town. Just on social media alone, we have over 15,000 people on our Twitter and 20,000 on Facebook. And those are people from around the world who specifically come here to not only the chess capital of America, but many look at it as the chess capital of the world because we have such amazing facilities. So it's really great to see that impact here locally, but then also all around the world.
You know, and Kylie can probably speak to this more than I can, but, you know, one of the great things is whenever I get to travel for my job and I get to go to Europe or someplace else, you hear people outside of the United States say, oh, you're from St. Louis. That's the chess city. So it's not just that
How
we've got a
that?
Great club and a great Hall of Fame, but St. Louis itself has been branded as a chess city.
That's kind of a nice feather in our cap, you know. We have lots of halls of fame, but this—that's really tremendous. Well, what is astounding to me is those numbers that you just sort of blurted out there, Kylie.
Yeah.
It's like, holy cow! I really had no idea what a huge footprint.
Very popular.
Yep. In addition to that, YouTube, for example, we have lectures by grandmasters that come through St. Louis, and we record those, put those up on YouTube. So we have more than 100,000 subscribers to our YouTube channel, millions and millions and millions of minutes of chess watched.
Wow, that is. And, of course, your YouTube, it can sort of take care of itself then, you know, so you don't have to be actively involved hands-on. Now, with the Hall of Fame, let's talk about what kind of events you do have. I mean, we've sort of lightly talked about it, but you've got a whole series of things going on.
Yeah, well, we are an exhibiting and collecting institution. So we basically put on about five, six shows a year. I want to point out that you do not have to be a chess player or know a lot about chess to come visit the World Chess Hall of Fame.
Well, that's good because your interviewer doesn't know nearly as much as she should.
And so we want to look at a level of learning where if you are a chess expert or a really good player or a chess historian, you're not going to be bored. but we don't want to make it a place where anyone would be intimidated right. by it. So we do chess and art, we do chess and culture, and we do chess history. And so there's a little something for everybody when you come down. And then, Brian, if you want to talk about some of our other programming that we do.
Sure. You know, I think one of our staple programs is our monthly music series. Mm. It's just so wonderful. We get to work with Bjorn Ranheim, who's affiliate of the St. Louis Symphony, you know, bring in some wonderful talent. And it's everything from stomping feet and bluegrass music, you know, to chamber pieces. It's always a sold out show. It's just such a special, intimate evening. We move out some of our display objects on our third floor gallery. Real intimate space. It's such a crowd pleaser.
Well, you know, as a matter of fact, you've got an event coming up here on August 22nd, the Mighty Pines. Now, who are the Mighty Pines?
We do. So they are a St. Louis group. They've been on the scene now for about 4 or 5 years. They describe themselves as bluegrass meets acoustic soul and rock and roll. And they are really inspired just by St. Louis City and the St. Louis area. You know, they love the rivers here. They mention the red brick streets in their music. It's going to be a really great time.
Oh, it sounds like it. And like you said, with Bjorn Ranheim and probably the 442s and other folks like that, too, they also have coming up a Baroque chamber trio called Le Petit Brise. Scott Kennebec and John Powell Walsh are going to be there in October. Hand-me-down music from the Heartland and Christmas with Cortango in December. How fun is that? So, yeah, it's wonderful because, of course, we are a classical music station to, you know, to let people know just how wide and varied this is. You also have a lot of a spotlight series on composers that you collaborate with the St. Louis Symphony, and they haven't yet announced what will be this October and November.
Yes, those are coming soon, but it's wonderful. We do this quarterly. You know, we feature contributions from select composers. Our first performance was with the Malbec Quartet, and they covered Johann Brahms. Mm. It was just a magical evening. But yeah, again, you know, Bjorn Ranheim, you know, he's such a pleasure to work with. And of course, yes. Our collaboration with the St. Louis Symphony is just wonderful.
Oh, yeah. And what wonderful community partners. Now, you may not be at liberty to discuss it, but there's a possibility of yet another angle of this coming in with another
Well, the Hall of Fame, our name could be deceptive because you would think it's, you know, kind of your typical
Hall of Fame.
Sports Hall of Fame. But like I said, we do a lot of different kinds of cultural aspects, looking at the game in different ways. But it's really like a salon. It's like a cultural salon.
Nice.
And so we do, as you know, Brian was pointing out, have these great music series, and we do some, you know, lectures, and we do, you know, this fun kind of hip thing going on right now where we have like crafts and cocktails. So there'd be a signature nice. Cocktail, and then you make a piece of artwork based on something in one of the exhibitions. But to celebrate the 10th anniversary of the club that evening, we had a really special private event, which was through Opera Theater.
Oh, nice.
And it was magical.
Oh,
and
so wonderful.
I still think about it, and it was, like, you just had goosebumps having those singers, like, feet away from you, like, in the space where you work. It was wonderful. So we... Who knows? We might end up with an opera series.
Wouldn't that be cool, though? You know, it's a maybe. It's on the drawing board, a maybe.
I wouldn't complain, let's just say.
you wouldn't go home crying.
No, I wouldn't.
No, unless it was tears of joy.
Exactly.
Now, you have lots of community events, too, and this is sort of both with the chess club and with the Hall of Fame. Let's talk about some of these community events. There's one coming up Sunday, the Family Day. Who wants to handle that one?
We have... like I said, we have a lot of adult programming, but we love our little ones and try to get them eager and playing the game early on. And so while the club does a lot of the lessons, we do things like family days on Sundays where people can come and go, get a tour, and create some kind of cute artwork that's based on it. And then very popular is our Toddler Tuesdays program, and that is Tuesday mornings, and it's for babies to age 3. And no, we're not putting them in baby chess tournaments or anything like that. It's just kind of helping them, which would be amazing, by the way.
Dress them up like a little pawn or a rook or a bishop, yes, or something.
So we do, you know, some cognitive learning. That's for wonderful. Them.
Well, you have it building brain power. I like that. I like that. And then, yeah, there's a lot going on for the community here in August and family days. And then as it all goes through, you've got also this, is it pronounced Staunton? I used to live in Virginia, so that would be called Staunton, the town in Virginia. Which is it?
Staunton.
Staunton, yes. Standard. A talk with collectors and curators.
Yeah, we've got 3 shows that we opened up in April. To kind of help celebrate, again, the 10th anniversary of the club, we did some extra programming with that, with unveiling the world's largest chess piece, because we actually had that in 2012, and then we got beat.
We got beat
by...
We took it back.
And then we took it back.
Checkmate.
Exactly. And we're doing... We have 3 exhibitions up right now. So the art one is called Painted Pieces, Art Chess from Purling, London. And those are Staunton-style chess pieces that are adapted by contemporary artists. It's a company, a luxury game company of Purling out of London. And they commission artists to do these, you know, bespoke chess sets that some of them deal with very heavy themes, some of them are very light, some of them are just representations of the artist's own work. So we have that. Our second floor, we do have the Staunton Standard, which is looking at the evolution of the modern chess set. And Howard Staunton was basically like, he was endorsing the set. It wasn't something he created. So it was like Michael Jordan and sneakers.
Yes.
and that was created in 1849. And that style of set is still the tournament set today. So when Tony and Kylie talk about the events coming up at the club, you know, that's the set. I think if anyone thinks about it, what a chess set looks like, the Staunton set is the one that people think. And then on our third floor, we have an exhibition called The Sinkfield Effect, The Resurgence of American Chess. And so that is looking at 10 years of chess in St. Louis and the remarkable impact that the Sinkfields had on bringing chess back to the United States.
That's great. I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to visit musically with one of the chess pieces, actually with several of them, and we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit more about the chess club and what all's coming up with on your docket, too. We have a piece that I happened to stumble across in the library the other day as I was preparing this interview. It's by Sir Arthur Bliss, and the name of it is so appropriate, The Checkmate Suite. This is the second movement called The Dance of the Red Pawns. How apropos. Thank you. That was The Dance of the Red Pawns from the Checkmate Suite by Sir Arthur Bliss, and it was played for us by the Royal Scottish National Orchestra and David Lloyd-Jones. We'll probably visit with another couple pieces at the end of our interview here, but right now I'm going to take it over to you, Tony, which, as the executive director of the St. Louis Chess Club, you've got a lot of things that are on the docket. Tell us about them.
That's right. We have a very busy summer.
More to the microphone. Sorry. There you
yes.
go.
So we actually have a very busy summer. In fact, we started with the U.S. Championship and the U.S. Women's Championship back in April. We had the Junior Championship and the Girls Junior Championship in July. And now we're moving into our big international season. We have two tournaments. One is called the St. Louis Rapid and Blitz. The other one is called the Sinkfield Cup. Rapid and Blitz, just like it sounds. Fast chess, fast pace, lots of pieces flying, lots of chess players trying to win. Sinkfield Cup, classical chess, slow, steady, one game a day, perseverating over these deep thoughts in a chess game. So those two events will feature 10 of the best players from around the world. We have the world champion, the Norwegian Magnus Carlsen. We have three Americans who are actually in the top 10 in the world right now: Hikaru Nakamura, Fabiano Caruana, who's the challenger for the world championship in November, and Wesley So. So as an American, of course, I'm rooting for my three hometown heroes.
Sure.
and hoping that they're going to bring home the points. But no matter what the outcome, these tournaments are... they represent the best chess events in the world. You know, I heard a great story one time from a former world champion challenger, Gata Kamsky, and he said, a game of chess is like a musical composition. It's like two composers trying to compose the same piece at the same time. And if they aren't in sync, if there's not some harmony between the two of them, the game comes out, or the piece comes out in this case, chunky, convoluted. You don't really understand it. It doesn't make sense. Uh-huh. But when those two composers are able to bring their pieces together in a harmonious way, you produce something beautiful. Much in the same way, these chess games amongst very, very good players end up being very beautiful, because you have two players who are at the peak of the game. They know everything that humans know about chess, and they're able to take that and play off of one another's ideas and play off of these themes that reoccur throughout the game. So I see the parallels very closely tied to music as well.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I never thought of it in that way, but it really is a conversation of sorts.
Absolutely.
Wow. Very, very interesting. What a perfect quote to bring onto a classical music station. I mean, really, he just hit a home run, didn't he? I should reintroduce you for those who may have tuned in the middle. Tony Rich, you just heard. He's the executive director of the St. Louis Chess Club. He's joined by Kylie Herndon, who's the marketing communications associate with the St. Louis Chess Club. And then we have Shannon Bailey, and she's the chief curator at the World Chess Hall of Fame. And Brian Flowers, who's the marketing communications coordinator at World Chess Hall of Fame. And as we were listening to the pawns dancing about there, somebody mentioned something about Boy Scout badges.
That's right. So, we're very lucky, like Shannon mentioned earlier, to have Dr. Jeannie and Rex Sinkfield as the founders of the club and the Hall of Fame. They both have a lot of passion for the area, for St. Louis in particular, and for the state of Missouri in general. And their interests are varied as well. They like music, they're interested in Boy Scouts, they're interested in composers, symphonic music, as well as chess, obviously. So we try to find ways to tie all of these things together. So as I mentioned, Dr. Jeannie Sinkfield in 2011 thought, boy, I wonder why the Boy Scouts don't have a chess merit badge. She contacted the National Council and got the ball rolling. And since then, in the past 7-8 years now, there are 170,000 Boy Scouts that have learned how to play chess and earn the chess merit badge.
Boy, that's great.
It really is. Especially for a chess dork like me. I've got all of these great little kids that are coming up the ranks that want to take lessons. They want to learn from grandmasters. They have idols. They have people that they want to follow their games and their style. It's great.
Now, as first chair chess dork here, when you are doing these tournaments, are you filming these at the time? Are you filming all the tournaments and all the games that go on with them?
Absolutely. And I have to say that's probably one area where I'm most proud of what we do at the club. I mentioned that the game of chess can seem very difficult to break into if you've never played before. Mm-hmm. It can seem very intimidating, to be honest. And what we try to do is make that not be the case with the work at the World Chess Hall of Fame and the exhibits that they have, and at the chess club, whether it's the classes and the lectures or this great commentary. So for an event like the Sinkfield Cup or the St. Louis Rapid and Blitz, we'll have a team of commentators, usually three or four, that will be doing kind of the typical play-by-play that you'd see on any sports announcement.
Yeah.
Circle circles and arrows on the board and drawing the plans and saying the player looks like he's, you know, under stress. He's really sweating it out in this game. So the commentators are able to break things down for chess players and non-chess players into something that makes a little bit more sense and is a little bit more human than just the chess moves.
So this is this streamed live or is this wow?
Yeah, this
so
is streamed live on YouTube.
So they're making these comments, but they're obviously not there in the room because that would be really distracting. It'd be like having somebody with a microphone as you're doing a 20-foot putt. I mean, it would be the worst.
Right. So we've got the commentary studio downstairs where we do all of our filming. The players play upstairs. When their games are done, they come down and give some analysis. They give a little interview of what they were thinking and what they were feeling throughout the game. We try to pepper in fun things also throughout these tournaments. They're serious. Yeah. I mean, these players are competing for $450,000 in prize money.
My goodness.
So $500,000 on the line over the next 3 weeks. And so, but at the same time, they also understand that this is a form of entertainment, that they're really trying to entertain the chess audience. So we introduced a new idea called the chess confessional booth. So the players can go into this soundproof booth in the middle of their game, and some of the quotes that you get out of there are great. I can't believe I just dropped that pawn. I forgot my preparation. It looks like I'm just going to get crushed in this game. I mean, really insights into the human psyche and what it feels like to play the game of chess.
Wow.
So the commentary is a load of fun for chess players and non-chess players.
Oh, I would think so. Absolutely. Now, as we were talking earlier and, you know, we talking about the website and everything, let's talk about it specifically. That website that you have, both of these, we have the stlouischessclub.org and then also worldchesshof.org. And they're it's really easy to navigate. And I think I probably have to give kudos there to Brian and to Kylie in that regard. How much time did it take to get this really to the point that it's so slick and easy to navigate?
Well, we just redesigned the World Chess Hall of Fame website last year, and it took about a full year to redesign that, to get that to the level that the World Chess Hall of Fame is at. Mm-hmm. We have so many beautiful exhibitions there, and we wanted the website to really reflect that and really kind of give you a glimpse into who we are and what we do. So that did take a while. The St. Louis Chess Club website has been, you know, designed that way for a while now, but that website is constantly evolving as well. I mean, we have to make updates to it, you know, every day with all of the events we have, but we really hope that they're easy for people to navigate and find, you know, our tournaments or events that we're having. And we are really proud of them, so thank you for noticing.
Oh, my goodness, yeah, it was great. And this all came about because of an email that Brian and I had exchanged. And the first thing I did was go to the website and went, holy cow, what a neat website. I mean, really, and some of these collections that you've got here, you know, that you've got shown there, like the painted pieces. And then you were mentioning a Fabergé piece set.
Yeah, one thing that's great about the website is it's comprehensive. So it's not like we have, you know, a landing page that just talks about an exhibition and then it kind of disappears after the exhibition is over. We have had incredible success with our attendance since we've opened. We're probably close to 90,000 visitors for, you know, a small niche institution.
That's great.
You know, we're really happy about it, but we know that we have an international audience and we know that we are very interested in people learning about the game. And, you know, we have our mission that talks about collecting and celebrating the cultural aspects of the history. But I really just say we want to make chess fun for everybody. And so you can go to our website and you can go back to all of our exhibits that have ever been there and some of our, community exhibitions. Like we're at the airport right now in one of their shows.
Perfect.
And we partnered.
Oh, what a great thing for visitors to St. Louis.
Yeah, it's really great. And we get a lot of feedback from that too. And in fact, somebody actually flew into St. Louis, saw that show, did not know that the Hall of Fame was here, came to the Hall of Fame to see it just because they saw the show at the airport. So that works.
There it is. Yeah, that worked. Score one.
So you can go and kind of learn about these past shows and see the exhibition images and details of the pieces. And one of our very favorite shows that we've done is from the collection of Dr. George and Vivian Dean. We've highlighted their collection. They have probably, arguably, the premier private chess collection in the entire world. And they own the only two Fabergé chess sets that were ever made. And we've exhibited them at the Hall of Fame twice. So we're very lucky with that.
Oh, my. What a wonderful thing for you that, you know, they feel comfortable letting you exhibit them. And
it's an honor.
It's a huge honor. And, you know, sometimes that you don't think about it from that aspect. And it's mm-hmm. truly quite a compliment
it's
to you.
Great.
Now, you were about to say something here, Tony.
Yeah, so I was just going to mention that, you know, when you think of a World Chess Hall of Fame, you would assume that all of the exhibits are going to be very chess heavy. And that's not necessarily the case. You know, they had an exhibit called Kings, Queens, and Castles that was a partnership with the Magic House of St. Louis. It was literally a giant castle in the middle of the World Chess Hall of Fame where kids could come in and play around on mats and put on their costumes and dress up like the knights and the bishops and the kings and queens. Chess and Comic Books was another great show. They had comic books that have exhibited themes of chess throughout, a green screen wall where you can go put on your superhero costume, or drafting tables where you can go be your own cartoonist and draw your own chess comics. You know, chess in fashion, chess in history. I mean, really, the chess part is the common thread, but everything else about the Hall of Fame is what people are drawn to, what they're interested in. And that's one of the great things, is showing how chess has influenced or impacted all of these areas of our lives, even though we didn't know it.
You know, it just is jaw-dropping to me how out of the box your thinking is. Getting the kids involved is so important, and the creativity that goes into this. So I have a question for each of you, which is, personally, how have the St. Louis Chess Club and the Hall of Fame enriched your life? Shannon.
Ooh, I get to go first.
Yeah, throw the ball to you.
Exactly.
Oh, no.
So one of the first questions that people ask me when they interview me is like, how long have I been playing chess, and what's my rating? And I'm not actually a very good chess player at all.
Meet your sister here.
But I am a historian at heart, and I've wanted to work in a museum since I was probably 5 years old. And so it's been so fun working here, because I basically get paid to learn, and I get paid to make people excited and teach them. And we get tons of first-time visitors, and you always hear the same thing over and over again. Wow, I never knew, you know, dot, dot, dot. I never knew that there were all these kinds of chess sets. I never knew that chess was incorporated into advertising so much. I never knew there was a connection to fashion. You know, that is fun that, you know, I always wanted to teach as well, and so I get to do it.
There you are.
You know, that people have talked about the Scholastics and meeting these international stars, and I'm not from St. Louis, but I'm so proud to live here now, and it's so fun to be a part of growing the city and changing the way people think about the game or these facilities in the Central West End. So it's been a true honor, and I can't wait to see what we continue to do.
Me either. And Tony, that same question to you.
Boy, that one's an easy one for me. I was a chess dork through and through growing up. I think I mentioned that.
Self-proclaimed.
That's right. So I played chess in high school, and I helped the Missouri Chess Association run events. And so when the club came about and the idea of this club came about, I was all in. Yeah. And for me, what has been most impactful is, you know, the opportunity to bring in the world champion. We've had Garry Kasparov, Anatoly Karpov, Magnus Carlsen, Vishy Anand. These are all people that have been world champions over the last 15 or 20 years. So for me, it's like, you know, bringing in the Michael Jordans and the LeBron Jameses and your idols,
the rock
right?
Stars, yeah.
Right. So the very first international tournament that we held, Vishy Anand, an Indian grandmaster who was world champion, he was in St. Louis. He was playing the event. And I'm driving to work one day, and as I'm coming up to the club, I see Vishy walking down to a cafe to grab a coffee and a bagel, and I almost crashed my car. I was like, oh my gosh, there's Anand. Who would have thought? I had to reel myself in once I realized that, of course, he's here. We invited him. But
I had something to do with this.
Right. So for me, being able to see these great players come through town and meet them and talk to them and have dinners with them is a dream come true. Yeah. And also, I love seeing that same impact on kids. You know, like Kylie mentioned, we've got programs in about 100 schools in the St. Louis area. And we always have field trips, and we bring them down to get autographs from these great players and the chance to meet them. And it helps break down this idea that if you want to be rich and famous one day, you either have to be a musician or an athlete or a TV, you know, an actor or something. You know, these chess players get the opportunity to travel the world. They make very good money. They're very well known worldwide. And for little kids to get the chance to meet these people and see their idols too, that's the dream come true.
Oh, indeed. Well, Kylie, since he just mentioned you, I'm going to ask you, how has the chess club and the Hall of Fame impacted your life?
As Shannon mentioned, I also kind of was one of those people that I never knew that chess was here in St. Louis, let alone this amazing kind of underground society with people who are so excited about the game always. And since working here, I've met some really amazing people that I work with and made some really great friends with the chess players we bring in. But overall, I would say that it's really enriched my life because I'm a part of something that's much bigger than myself. And it's really bringing about this amazing resurgence of chess in America. And it's really cool to be a part of that, especially since our own St. Louis resident, Fabiano Caruana, is playing in the World Championship in November.
Go, Fabiano.
That's right.
Right. That hasn't happened in an undisputed World Championship since Bobby Fischer. So it's really neat to be a part of something that's so big and continues to grow. Since I started working here just a few years ago, we've added another amazing international tournament to the Grand Chess Tour. Four more international tournaments that are a little smaller scale, but still a big deal in our Classic Series. And it's just really neat to be a part of something that just continues to grow and really helping it kind of get there in a place that more mainstream people will see. So it's very exciting.
Indeed it is. And finally, to Brian Flowers.
Yeah, well, everyone did such a great job of...
everybody said what you were going to say.
All of my answers. I have similar feelings about it. I think with all of my colleagues here, I'm a board game freak. I first played chess, I think, when I was 7, and some neighborhood kids and I just pulled it out, read the instructions, interpreted it the way that worked for us, and quote unquote played the game. But my background is in fine art. And so for me personally, when I discovered what the World Chess Hall of Fame was doing, I thought to myself, wow, like, not only are we doing chess, but we're using art to tell the story of chess.
Yeah.
And then when I first started working with the Hall of Fame 7 years ago, I started out as the buyer for the gift shop Q Boutique.
Oh, yeah. Well, I forgot to mention that.
which I'm still involved with. But again, you know, such a great combination of all of my skill sets rolled into one with my retail and buying background as well. But I turn into such a fanboy when the artists come to these exhibitions. I mean, one of them, Marcel Dezama, he has exhibited with us twice. And when we were going through the checklist, you know, for the first exhibition, I thought, this artwork looks familiar. And then I pieced it together. Oh, he did an album cover for Beck, who happens to be one of my favorite musicians. And anyway, he came, he was so humble, you know, he took the time to not only autograph things for all of us, but doodled them as well. And,
oh, how cool.
You know, every time you get to interact with an artist in real life, being an artist, it's just such an honor.
Indeed it is. Indeed it is. Well, I want to thank all four of you for all the enrichment that you've done for the Hall of Fame. I'll throw this once again to Kylie and to Brian. Give us the contact information for the Chess Club, Kylie.
Sure. You can visit stlouischessclub.org to get any information you need. And to stream the upcoming tournaments, you would go to grandchesstour.org. And you can always stop by. We're down in the heart of the Central West End. There's a 20-foot chess piece out front, so you can't miss
us. Hard to miss. Hard to miss. And Brian, for the Hall of Fame.
Yes, so our website is worldchess, H-O-F, as in Hall of Fame, .org. You can also find us on all of the social media channels that everyone loves, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, at World Chess, H-O-F. And we also have a weekly newsletter that you can sign up for on our website. And we send you a very quick and easy condensed version of all of our programs, all of our exhibitions, and everything coming up.
That's just tremendous. I want to thank all four of you for being here this morning. What fun. We should have ordered a pizza.
What we should have done is brought a chess set.
There you go. Keep me occupied for a long time. Well, back to Sir Arthur Bliss and his checkmate suite. We have the entry of the Black Queen. Drum roll, please. And then we have the Red Knight's Mazurka and the Ceremony of the Red Bishops, all from the Checkmate Suite by Sir Arthur Bliss. Thank you all for being here this morning. This has just been so much fun.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Entry of the Black Queen, The Red Knight's Mazurka, and The Ceremony of the Red Bishops, all part of the Checkmate Suite, written by Sir Arthur Bliss and played for us by David Lloyd-Jones and the Royal Scottish National Orchestra.
Meet me at the Muni, in Forest Park.
We're off to the Muni, based on the heartwarming